Hey, what's going on? This is well long overdue. I apologize to my guest, Ashley Newell, but I got rerouted through Texas for a couple of weeks, but better late than never. This is episode 53.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker.
Hey, welcome back. This is Ego and Vice. This is episode 53. And as I said in the intro, I have a friend of mine that I've known for quite a while. His name is Ashley Newell.
Hello.
How's it going?
Excellent.
And I think we first met. You're a local musician. You're like a Renaissance man. You do all kinds of stuff. And I know now, the thing that I'm most focused on now from seeing you around is that you're in Jumpin' Joel Flash and the Magic Machine.
Correct.
But that's not the only thing you do. Like, you do tons of stuff.
Yep.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm, like, pointing at him. I'm like, what's happening? But I think the first time we ever met must have been the open mic at Live on Elgin?
Was it Live on Elgin or Lunenburg?
I think it was Live on Elgin.
Okay.
Because I don't think I've ever been to Lunenburg.
Oh, you missed out, man.
Yeah.
That was a good time over there. Holy shit. Can we swear, by the way?
Sure. Oh, yeah. I don't. Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Just no, you can only say the F-bomb twice.
Okay.
No, I don't give a shit. Yeah. So, local musician, host, you do it all. What's going on? Who are you? What the hell is happening?
I actually recently read a really good book. It was about goal setting. It's by a guy named Stephen Stone, and it's called Whatever It Takes. Stephen Stone was the executive producer of the Junos for about 20 years, and he's been the executive producer of Degrassi all along.
Oh, nice.
He's a songwriter. He's very passionate about songwriting. And when he was young, the Beatles came along. He was born in 48. The Beatles came along, and he's like, holy shit. Like, this is, I want to be a rock star. Mm. And so he wrote some hit songs that a buddy of his sung in the 70s. Wow. They're really cheesy, but they were like top 30 in Canada. But he never became a rock star, as it were, but he brings rock stars along. And so he was also an artist manager. So he worked with people like Katie Lang along the way, like very early on, got her first contract, Cowboy Junkies. Again, the book's called Whatever It Takes. I highly, highly recommend it. The point being, when I was young, I was like, I want to play music for a living. Mm-hmm. And the idea being that I would be a rock star, you know, like the Beatles.
Yeah.
And here I am making a living making music. I'm not a rock star like the Beatles, but I'm a rock star, you know, in my own mind.
Yeah, it's funny, like a lot of people that come into South Hood Studio to sit and talk to me. A lot of us as musicians in Ottawa, or musicians all around, a lot of us have the same story where it's like we were music lovers when we were kids, and you may have picked up an instrument along the way somehow, and then you started playing. And there was always that kind of dream in the back of your mind saying, ooh, this is what I want to do with my life. And that's one aspect of it, right? Yeah, I want to play music for the rest of my life. But then there was always that kind of little spark of like, I can make a living, or I can make a really good living off this. Let's go for it type of thing.
Well, in the 90s, people were getting signed. And so during the Halifax explosion, as it were, which was sort of the Canadian version, I guess, of the Seattle explosion with Nirvana, all that kind of stuff,
sure,
which happened maybe a year later or so around, I don't know, 93, 94, when Sloan came out and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I could have been there for that, but I didn't have the marks to get into Dalhousie. University in Halifax. Otherwise, I would have been there and might have gotten on that train. But anyways, I did work in the industry very briefly in, say, around 94, I think it was. I was an intern for Blue Rodeo. And so I was working with various artist managers. They had some interest in managing me as a singer-songwriter at the time. Now, my story is that my parents were like, you will work at the family business. You will not do this music crap.
What was the family business?
Trucking. Mm-hmm. And I tried that on and off for 20 years. I did my rock and roll duty, as it were, for the family biz. But of course, the more they told me not to play music, the more that I had to.
AZ license or DZ? You probably didn't have to because you were family, I guess.
I didn't drive the trucks, and they were too big.
Oh, you were
scary.
The office. Well, you were management. Shit. Sorry, I didn't mean to take you off track.
Oh, no, not at all. So speaking of singer songwriting, this is one of the main reasons I'm here today. I got a show with my band Newell and the Gang next Friday, November 16th. We're playing with the Artichoke Hearts and Newell and the Gang. We used to be called Ashley Newell and the Raging Suburbanites. Yeah. And that was, so I do a lot of covers music. That's how I'm making my living now, but I'm still performing my original material. We used to be Ashley Newell and the Raging Suburbanites. We're now a trio. It's myself, Adam Fogo, and Jack McGregor. You might know Jack.
Ah, McGregor.
Yeah. Now, Jack is in Saskatoon these days, so we're bringing in our other drummer.
Saskatchewan?
That's right. Bringing in our other drummer from Toronto, a guy named Chris Cawthrey. He's a fabulous player. He was actually the first drummer I ever played with as a teenager, and both of us, he was maybe, I don't know, 14, and I was 16 when we first started playing together, and here we are. We're both playing music for a living still.
Are you from Ottawa?
I am from Toronto.
You're from Toronto.
Well, I'm from Aurora, to be precise.
Okay. And how long were you there for?
I was in Aurora until I got kicked out of my house for doing this music stuff and for quitting the family biz in 1995.
Okay.
And basically, you know.
Early 20s.
Yep. And the last couch on earth for me to stay on that December, it was getting cold, was in Ottawa at a buddy's place. And so I'm like, you know what? Toronto kind of chewed me up and spat me out. And it was never really for me anyways. It's pretty conformist. I couldn't get a date there, which comes back to another reason why I play music. It's the only way I've ever really gotten any dates. So I've been in Ottawa ever since. I took 3 years off. I went to Guelph because they had a really great music scene there. Tried to do the white picket fence thing. That wasn't really for me. I'm a nonconformist. And then I wound up back in Ottawa in 2005.
Back in 95, when you said you got kicked out of your house for doing the music thing, what were you doing back then? Like, what kind of music were you playing? Like, what were you involved in?
I was aspiring to the Sgt. Pepper's aesthetic musically. Okay. I was trying to write music that that levitated. And there were, you know, built-in climaxes. There was a band that really inspired me called Jellyfish. Hmm. And they had four-part harmonies. Their songs were very intricate. So, for example, in 96, 97, I was playing with a drummer. It was more of a groove drummer. And in my songs at the time, there were lots of changes. My style has changed since then, mm-hmm. has evolved. My style's eclectic. There's some funk. There's some reggae. I'd like to play a reggae song called I'll Do You a little later in the show.
Sure.
But my home base is what I call Ontario folk rock.
Okay.
And Ontario folk rock, to me, the quintessential Ontario folk rock album is Shakespeare My Butt by the Lowest of the Low.
Ah, Lowest of the Low.
That's the high watermark of Ontario folk rock.
Okay, great.
And so that's kind of what I'm doing now. We just released a single, Newell and the Gang, this year, which is Ontario folk rock, I guess, with a country tinge, because we've got a pedal steel player named Mitch Jay, who won the Canadian Country Music Award mm-hmm. for steel guitar player of the year last year. And he just shreds on this track, You're Out of My Head. And it's a duet with Danielle Allard.
Okay.
Who folks would know. And you do, obviously, as well. And she's actually coming to the gig
awesome.
On November 16th at Bar Robo.
Bar Robo.
She's going to sing that song. We're going to do a Neil Young duet as well.
Nice. Which one?
She knows. Hanging on a Limb.
Ah, very good.
It's on the Freedom album.
So you got lots on the go, and you have lots of information, obviously. When you left Toronto and you came to Ottawa to sleep on that couch, did you immediately just pick up what you were doing in Toronto and just kept going with Ottawa? Did you find, like, was it harder in Ottawa, or was it just put your head down and keep running?
Well, at that particular point in 1995, I was broke.
I'm broke now.
Well, there you go.
I'm still broke.
I was like super broke. Yeah. I'd put out my first tape my first cassette tape in 1995. So I spent a bunch of money on that. I spent my money on school. And then, you know, as I mentioned, I quit the family biz and I was out on my ass. So, yeah, so everything that I had going in Toronto ended. I was playing with a really great drummer, a Juno Award-winning drummer, but he'd just come off another project, and I don't think he was ready to move on. And our project just wasn't working. There was some management interest, but I had to have a roof over my head, and that happened to be in Ottawa. Sure. So that was the end of that.
And Toronto being, I guess, in Canada, Toronto's like the Mecca if you want to, like, make it. It's like New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. That's Toronto, right? It's like a huge place. To come to Ottawa, which I love Ottawa, and I promote Ottawa. That's why I started the podcast, just to push Ottawa music and the
Ottawa
scene.
Ottawa
absolutely
rocks, man.
But it's also sometimes like pulling teeth in Ottawa, getting people out to the gigs, doing the networking, that type of stuff. You meet tons of great people, but it doesn't flow as smoothly as in Toronto, where it's just like, it's almost more like you have a business that's in a weird location and you have walk-ins or you have word of mouth and stuff like that. Did you find after leaving Toronto, obviously you were involved in music because you were passionate enough to be involved to the point where you ended up leaving that place. So you were involved when you came to Ottawa. And I don't know, I don't mean to repeat the question in a different wording, but, and you said all those connections that you met in Toronto, you basically, not connections, but everything you did in Toronto, you left behind. So you started from scratch in Ottawa. Did you find it, was it difficult to do that? Like, was it, or did you find Toronto and Ottawa, as far as the scenes, did you find them the same?
I play music for the enjoyment. Certainly the industry is in Toronto. If you want to make it in music, you almost definitely have to leave Ottawa.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem. Ottawa is one of the greatest places on planet Earth to live. Why would anybody want to leave it? And so a lot of people don't.
Well, you said like earlier in the podcast, you said, I want to be a rock star. So you thought you wanted to be, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the industry is in Toronto. When you came to Ottawa, what I said, we're starting from the bottom. Was it like starting over? Was it like a brand new thing? Or was it like, did everything catch on pretty well?
The music scene here was great in that the people are great, as we know. And that it's all about the enjoyment of playing. It's not about money. It's not about stardom. It's about just enjoying yourself playing. And in fact, around 2000, I'd burned myself out. I was going for it. It really felt like I had something to say, and that the music was good, and the musicians, you know, in my band were and are exceptional. But running a band at that point, it was called the Ashley Newell Band, and so I'm paying all the bills for the recording. I'm doing all the booking, and in the end, I'm like, I'm not having fun anymore. And, you know, so I took a hiatus and then it just became about the fun. And in terms of making it, yeah, that's a bonus, but it's about having fun with friends, making music, you know, and that's about it. Yeah.
I think if you talk to any long-term musician in any city or anywhere in the world, that's what it has to be about, because if you basically strive for fame and popularity and stuff like that, you're going to kind of be sorely disappointed. Or if you're in music to kind of make money, then it's going to like kind of bite you in the ass. And I had a really good conversation with a friend that's funny earlier today, and he was in Manitic up in the bigger end of, you know, the rural area, and there's all these huge houses, and he's like, who are these people that have money? Who are these fucking people? And I said, well, there's probably like doctors and lawyers and CEOs and, you know, like, but it's like, all I ever wanted to do when I was a kid was play music. That's all I ever wanted to do. And I'm sure there's people out there that all they ever wanted to do was be doctors or be lawyers or be CEOs of companies or stock traders and stuff like that, right? And it's just like not every single person who plays music is going to be Mick Jagger, let's say. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not every single person who wants to be a doctor is going to be like the head of neurosurgery in like Hollywood, California, or wherever. You know, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. But it's just like, but at 40, in middle age is what you said earlier, to still be doing it and to still have the passion. All I ever wanted to do was be a rock star. Well, to play music. Didn't completely pan out, but I'm still doing it. And to meet another person who has the same kind of ideal, you know, where it's just like, I do it because I love it. I do it because it's inside me. It's very inspiring, and I'm much respect, sir.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, we just can't not do it. It's just kind of an automatic, and you know, like I was saying earlier, like the more my folks said, stop this with this music crap, you know, the more I just got dug in. And actually, you know, looking back, that was a for any artist, I think, is a gift.
Yeah.
You know, if you have something like that in your childhood that really lights a fire under your ass.
Yeah. And it's like telling someone to say, like, when are you going to stop doing this music thing? It's like people who aren't involved in it to the extent that we have been or you have been, to have that passion inside you, it's like telling somebody, stop loving somebody, like right now.
Yeah.
Like, when are you going to get over that and just stop? You can't help it because it is inside you, right?
Mm.
And I completely understand that. And, you know, I play as much as I can, and you're doing so much good for the Ottawa scene. You have so much experience back in the Toronto scene, and you're just, you know, you're living your life. You're being yourself. And that's fucking amazing. And I'm super proud of that. So.
Cheers, man.
You are a pillar of this community, motherfucker. But either way, that was a really good intro for the start of the podcast. Why don't we play a song so we can give these people something to chew on?
All right, perfect. Well, we might as well start with the single, the 2018 single, You're Out of My Head, Newell and the Gang featuring Danielle Allard and Mitch J on Pedal Steel.
All right, I'm with Ashley Newell. This is Ego and Vice, episode 53. Jesus Christ, what's the song called again? I'm so sorry.
You're Out of My Head.
You're Out of My Head by Newell and the Gang.
You got it.
All right.
Fool again, your bastard love. Can't wait. Boiled again, that's enough of my day. You're right. out of my head all the time. And I think if I'm out of your head, that's just fine. Cause if they, then I'm not in your league. And only you're not in mine. You're not in mine.
So lots of projects you've been involved in Ottawa,
mm-hmm.
and in Toronto. Let's just touch base a little bit, just because we're both sitting here. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the live on Elgin open mic. When I think that's where we first
probably
met. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you get that gig?
I was doing open mic at the Lunenburg. Which was a short-lived, amazing, magical pub on Waller Street. Waller Street Brewery is now below it. So basically Waller at Rideau, like Rideau between Dalhousie and Cumberland, mm-hmm. an old stone building, beautiful stone building. And I was hosting open mic there. And it was a smaller room. It was very intimate, if you will. We just had an amazing thing going. I was co-hosting with Jim McDowell, mm-hmm. Who now plays in Tulips and Devil Ships, and he's playing in a bunch of acts these days. Originals acts. Mm-hmm. Most of my acts at the moment, other than Jumpin' Joel Flash and the Magic Machine and Newell and the Gang, are covers acts. We'll get into that in a second, I suppose. But one of the owners of Live on Elgin, he'd come by the open mic at Lunenburg.
John
okay. Reese Sevenchuk. Yeah, I believe that's how it's pronounced.
That sounded right. That sounded nice.
Yeah. So he liked what we were doing, and he was opening the new club, Live on Elgin, and he asked us to host, which was perfect. I'd gone 6 months without hosting. I was missing it. Mm-hmm. Now, that room for me was a little bigger, and so I couldn't do quite what I was doing at Lunenburg, where we could really energetically curate the crowd.
Right.
You know, like if there were, bad actors or actresses for that matter, we could just kind of like, keep them out.
Yeah.
And with Live on Elgin, it was a bit of a bigger room. Again, like hosting open mic is an amazing job. It's the best job in the world because you never know who's going to walk through that door and just blow the roof off of the place. Mm-hmm. And so the problem actually with the numbers were it got too popular. And so, so there's always somebody at the end of the night who got burned and was going on at like 1 o'clock and they're all pissed off. Now the super cool thing that came out of that, for me was the TV show. So, Rogers came in early on. They were looking for a new place to film their open mic show. Mm-hmm. And so they filmed ours. So we've got basically a year. Filmed, and I've got the DVD. It took me a year to get the DVD, and God bless them at Rogers. They kept their word.
Is it like a compilation of all the stuff, or
it's every show?
Oh wow,
yeah, which is fantastic. And they posted stuff, and so that was amazing because it was just such a magical time to have that filmed and filmed professionally and recorded professionally.
Yeah.
So it was a great run. In the end, I was just burnt out.
Yeah.
I just put so much into hosting, and there's booking involved in that, and I just really put my heart and soul into it, and it was time to we brought a lot of artists along, which was amazing. Felt really good about that. And then the cover shows, which I do now, they pay the same.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hey.
They pay the same And you know, there's not as much bookings, there's not as much promo, so I can you know, enjoy more,
right.
You know, the rest of my time to do things like golfing, which is something we need
to do golf?
Oh,
do
yeah.
golf? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, there you go. Because you're always looking for like a second or a third, right? You know what I mean? Let's do it.
Put me on your golfing list, please, because, all the guys who I know, all the musicians especially, you know, in the winter, we'll golf. And you come up, no, I can't. Uh-huh. I'm not available. No, I can't. So count me in, man. But anyways.
You're on the list, bud.
Yeah. So kept going with the Battle of the Bands for another 6 months, which is called Play for the Pot, which was...
At Live
okay. as well. Okay. Yeah. That had previously been at the Lunenburg. And that was an absolute blast. Again, pays the same as the cover shows. Mm-hmm. And so... So now I'm just doing the cover shows for now. I would like to do another open mic down the road. I'd like to do it a little bit differently. The first open mic I did was a jam, more of a jam style.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that I want to do, possibly an afternoon show. Maybe even a buddy of mine, Matt Murphy, is hosting the Irene's open mic now,
which
I believe is 4 p.m. on Saturdays. So that'd be a good gig. I'd like to do something, you know, after I've had a few more years off of that.
And your current bandmate, Mr. Joel Elliott, I know there might have been a few hosts after you, has taken up the mantle of the Live on Elgin open mic.
That's a beautiful
host.
Thing. I was just there on Tuesday. Jim was featuring, Jim McDowell, with KJ Thomas in their Tulips and Devilships duo. The cameras were rolling. Rogers was in there. It was a great night. Joel does an amazing job. I can't think of a better guy to have taken that over.
Yeah, he's a sweetheart, right? And he loves music, and he's so personable, and he can go in there and just like have a good time with it and enjoys what comes in and what comes out, right?
Mm-hmm. And he's not drinking the beer either.
Right,
That'll add some longevity to his open mic hosting career, I'm sure.
Well, not to backtrack, because, but I remember, I think we were at, me and my friend Steph used to have an acoustic duo called the Copper Altar.
Yes.
And we used to, I think we did like a showcase or something. What did you call it? It was like a spotlight or a showcase, like every once in a while, or a feature.
Featured artist.
Feature, yeah. And we did that once, and I came up to you one night, and I was like, hey, man. Because I used to host open mics for Live 88.5 when the Live Lounge was downtown on George Street.
Right.
I used to host the Electric Frying Pan for almost 2 years.
And they'd record you. That was
Eric Worley, fucking cool as hell. Eric Worley was the sound guy, and you'd pay like an extra $5 or something like that, and you can get like a DVD at the end of the night. Here's your DVD.
Wow.
Yeah, and I said to you, I'm like, hey, if you ever need a co-host, I've done this and that, stuff like that. And then I got the call one day.
Yeah.
I think it was like a Facebook Messenger or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm short a guy. Do you want to come in? Yeah. I'm like, sure, man. And I hadn't done an open mic in a while, and we went together, or I got there, and we were just having a good time. It was fun. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to John, though, and I was just like, if you ever need like a host at any time, I'm going to bring it up. Yeah. I'm like, I'm available, this and that. And let's just clear the air. I totally wasn't trying to like step on your toes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was like completely like, if Ashley's like busy, or if somebody else or whatever, you ever need somebody to fill in, give me a call.
Yeah.
And then, but I like wrote out all my information on like a cocktail napkin.
Mm-mm.
And then you talked to John, you came up to me, and you're like, hey, dude, don't do that while we're working. And I'm like, what the fuck? I was just trying to be a nice guy. Whatever. And it was pretty funny.
So, yeah. So that was,
he just blew that one off.
No. That totally was cool. I was at the end of my rope at that point. Mm. I didn't realize that I was at the end of my rope.
Yeah.
And that night there was another, minor incident where I took offense. And
from me?
No.
Okay,
from
good.
Somebody else. From somebody Jesus. Else.
Because I was not trying to offend.
No, I know.
I respected what you were doing, dude.
Oh, yeah. No,
I
think the week prior, I was so stressed, I felt like I was levitating.
Oh, no.
You know, I was so fucking stressed out, right? And I was like, you know what, this isn't, I've done this for a few years. I've had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's time to do something else.
Yeah. Well, you got to move on sometimes, you know, the, you wake up one day and you're like, no, I'm gonna switch it up.
Yeah. So yeah, I just, it had become my identity. the hosting stuff.
Well, you're very good at it.
Well, thank you. And I had a lot of fun doing it, and met a ton of people who I'm still friends with, like yourself,
mm-hmm.
and saw a lot of artists coming up, it was a great time, but it was time to pass the torch.
When you left Live on Elgin, when you left like the hosting gig, I know you always had like a musical project on the go. Like, was it that much of a relief just to kind of step back and be like, okay, now I can focus on this other stuff? Or did you again take a little hiatus and just be like deflate and?
Sorry, run that question by me again.
When you left Live on Elgin from the hosting gig, you said like. Where you said like earlier, because you were stressed, like you were levitating.
Yeah.
When you left that, was that like a relief to just be like, okay, I don't, this is not like, this is becoming my identity. I just want to kind of deflate from it and do my own thing. Did you have other projects on the go that you could concentrate more on, or did you just take some time off and just kind of do your thing for a bit?
I found that job took up a lot of mind space. So it was, you only worked for 3-4 hours a night, and you were paid for 3-4 hours a night, but you were kind of on call all week with your featured artists and with your promo and everything else. And so that took a lot of mind space,
mm-hmm.
whereas with the covers gig, you know, yeah, I do some rehearsing and some planning and stuff like that. But you know, I have a lot more time to go golfing.
Yay! That's all you need sometimes, right?
Yeah, and to just live my life and hang out with friends and travel and all that kind of stuff.
So you took a deep breath and just said, "Let's reassess here."
There was some recovery time involved.
I remember the next time I saw you after the Live on Elgin gig was you were doing like some shows. I remember you were at the Barley Mow in Westboro. We ran into each other once. I don't know if you remember that.
Yep.
Because my ex-girlfriend, used to live just kind of around the corner, and we went in there. We used to go in there for drinks and stuff, and we sat and had a small conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I was drunk. You might have been drunk.
Probably.
Yeah, but we had a small conversation and stuff, and I always knew you were, because I follow you like on social media and stuff. I always know that you're very busy and involved and stuff, but really it's just, unless you pay attention, you don't pay attention, but... let's talk about Jumpin' Joel Flash and the Magic Machine if you want to.
Yeah.
Are we there? Are we there at
this
point?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've always been friends with Joel back from the Fuzzy Bunny Slaughterhouse days.
Oh yeah.
And when he put the Jumpin' Joel Flash and the Magic Machine, when he started putting that band together, your name popped up and it was just like, oh, it's fucking Ashley's in your band, no shit. So how did that come about? How long have you known Joel?
I've known Joel for as long as I've known you. I met him at the Live on Elgin open mic.
Okay.
So, you know, again, it was, you know, met tons and tons of people at Lunenburg and met a whole bunch of new and different people. A bunch of Lunenburg folks came over. Then there was a new crowd as well. And so I met him there and yeah, he's doing his opera thing and his show tunes and all the rest. And, you know, super nice guy.
Pretty theatrical fella, isn't he?
Exactly. And that was my interest in the band. Well, I mean, I enjoy his songs. I enjoy his performance.
Mm-hmm.
The act, Jumpin' Joel Flash and the Magic Machine, is half theater, half music. And I haven't done that before. It's also half men and half women,
mm-hmm.
which is completely new. I normally play in bands with like all dudes,
yeah.
or else one woman,
sure.
and the rest dudes. And so it, you know, it's for something different. And as well, in the past, in the late 2000s, for example, on any given year, I'd be playing in like 6-7 originals bands.
That's a lot. I don't even know how you balance that. Like, how do you be so like? How do you? But if I guess that's if. Like you said earlier, if your music is your life, you find the time to do it and you find some schedule to make it all work. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, I'm in two bands right now and it's like, I just want to go, like right now, I just want to lay down on the floor and go to sleep.
Well, the key to making that work was pretty happenstance, because one band would have a gig, you know, 1 month. And so you'd be rehearsing a bunch for that. And then another band would have, you know, on a different month. So I played in some really cool bands. I played in the Big Bend. Mm-hmm. I played with Dave Norris and Local Ivan. Mm-hmm. That was probably the best band I've ever played in.
Oh, wow.
Certainly the best songwriter I've ever played with. He was not so interested in being a rock star,
mm-hmm.
But he could have been if he'd wanted to. He's unbelievable, Dave Norris and Local Ivan. He's moved to Toronto.
Okay.
Plays at Cameron House, all that kind of shit.
Sure.
So
big shot, eh? Big shot.
Yeah. So how the hell did I get onto that? So I was playing in a whole bunch of bands. And then I started going into the covers bands because those are the ones that pay. And I met people that I play with in covers bands via booking and via hosting and all that kind of stuff. So it was fantastic. And so then next thing I knew, I'm playing in all covers acts and no originals acts.
Right.
So Jumbo Joe Flash came along. It's like, oh, this is an act that could and should be playing Blues Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always, I've played Blues Fest before. You probably have too, I'm sure.
Yep. Once with a band called Hearts and Minds, yeah.
Oh, you were in Hearts and Minds.
I was, yeah.
Oh.
For about 5 years, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I knew Hearts and Minds back in the day.
I'd like to give a quick shout out to Matt Luloff, who just won city councilman for Orleans, who was the lead singer of Hearts and Minds, anyway.
Oh, yeah. So I got into back when I was still making political commentary on social media, I think he and I got into some sort of a...
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Some sort of a huff, yeah.
No.
And so I haven't...
Matt's a sweet guy.
Oh, he is.
Ashley's a sweet guy. Matt's a sweet guy. It was probably just one of those nights.
Well, no, it's the nature of the beast.
Sure.
It's the nature of the beast, the social media. It's going to be... Obviously, the polarization of the world started before social media came along, and mm-hmm. social media has just amplified it. I mean, there was a point maybe 5 years ago where... You know, I thought maybe I could affect some change. And, you know, you're just sort of frustrating yourself. People don't want to read that shit, you know, and accomplishing nothing. Mm. Right. So I don't make any political commentary on social media anymore. As a matter of fact, I hardly make any commentary of any kind.
It's like beating your head against the wall. It's hard, right? You know what I mean? It's like if you want to get into a debate, it's just like someone's always going to pipe up and say something that just kind of like you want to respond back so bad. But it's just like, you know what? I'm just not going to do that because it's like lose-lose. It really is, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, and people get into arguments and nobody is changing their minds from these arguments. They're just getting more dug in and more upset.
Do you follow politics? Are you a very political person?
Oh, yes.
Do you have very strong opinions about stuff?
Yes.
All right. Oh, let's not talk about any of them. This is a family show, ladies and gentlemen.
Liz May for PM.
Yes, that's right. So as you were doing like all those projects, you said the cover bands and stuff like that, you still like six or seven things, you still found time to like go and do like pub gigs and like play like your acoustic guitar and stuff like that. Like, I don't get it. Maybe I'm just like slightly older than me, not much older than me, but mm-hmm. it's just like I hit a peak in like my 40s, like early 40s, where it was just like, I'm only gonna do this. Like, I'm still playing music, but this is all I'm gonna do. Like, I'm done. Just like, I'd love to play more, but energy wise, I just like, nah, sometimes I just want to sit on the couch, make bacon, watch Star Trek, mm-hmm. and go to sleep. I don't know. I wish I was as driven as you, for sure. It's commendable, man. It's amazing.
Well, you know, I just got to do. I mean, you probably have a day job. I don't have one of those.
Oh, I do. That's the thing. Yeah. Well, maybe that's why I'm so tired.
Maybe.
Maybe I should quit my day job. Anyway, let's play another song.
All right, cool. This one's I'll Do Ya. It's a reggae number that I wrote back in when I was in Guelph. I was having my first jam with this guy named Bougie. And I was like, well, I got to prep something. And so I started this reggae tune just came out of nowhere. And this is my big hit from, you know, maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago or so.
All right, cool. I'm here with Ashley Newell, the Renaissance man from Ottawa. This is Ego and Vice, episode 53. And this is a song called I'll
Do Ya.
You can do it. Yeah. I'll Do Ya.
Yeah. You're so fine, you are a work of art. Your smile is so bright, you are a jutting beacon. Temptation pulling me further.
so right, I could forget my life. I'll do ya, I'll do ya, I'll do ya. Flaps her wings, she gives a breath of fresh air. But her range is outer space. Oh, how I want for her to take me there. I'll do ya, I'll do ya, I'll do ya. Yes, I will think I'll do ya, bet y'all do ya. I might tie to ya. Someone else, and we talked all night over the pumping music, and the band whipped us into a frenzy. I stumbled outside wanting to call your name. I'll do ya, I'll do ya, I'll do ya. Yes, I will think I'll do ya. I'll do ya, I'd like to do ya.
So are you an avid songwriter? Do you write a lot of songs? Write a lot of music?
I've written a lot of songs. I haven't written songs in a little while. I came out with my greatest hits package, which I'll Do Ya was on, called Greatest Misses. And I came out with that in 2015. I haven't really written much since then. Just been focusing on... There's so many songs out there, and I can choose. There's so many songs as a covers artist that I can choose from as well. I'm sort of at a point where there's so many songs, there's so many songwriters with computer recording and everything else. I've written enough songs about love and sex. And I think I've done it, pretty well. Before that, there were all songs about unrequited love. That was my thing for a while. And now, you know, it's like, what do I want to write about? Ideally, I'd love to write about, you know, Ottawa, you know, just local stuff. Think locally, think globally, act locally, that kind of thing. And just sort of down, you know, street level stories or whatever. There's just such a din for me at this point in my songwriting career. I know that I would feel much different if I was still in my 20s, but I've written all those songs, you know, those passionate songs about love and everything else and breakups and get-togethers. And
I think that was my question too. And I've asked this of other like singer-songwriters around my same age, like in the same thing, like when you're 20, it was like the lyrics will just pour out of you and it just seems to make so much sense. And it's just like, yeah, this is, you know, it's so poignant and like whatever. The older you get when you're like writing a song, like the music will always come the way you want to hear it. But do you find it the older you get, the harder it is to like say something you want to say? Like in a lyric, do you ever step back and just be like, "This is so dumb"?
No, but I haven't. You know, I've continued writing poetry, but I've recently stopped doing that because I've just got reams and reams and reams of this stuff. But it never made me a dime. You know, it never made me a dime.
Fair enough.
So, you know, so now I'm focusing my energies on other things. You know, like making money and golfing and, you know,
yeah,
hanging out with my girlfriend and all that kind of stuff. So
that's great.
You know, and I'll come back to, yeah, certainly. I mean, have you heard Paul McCartney's new song?
I haven't. I love Paul McCartney. I went and saw him a couple of years. Remember Utah asked me if I played Blues Fest. Was that on mic or off mic? I can't remember.
I think it was off mic.
Off mic. Yes, I've played Blues Fest once before with my band Hearts and Minds, but the same night that or the same day that I played Blues Fest, Paul McCartney was playing at the CTC or the what the hell is it called now? Canadian Tire Center?
Yeah,
that night. So I had to leave like that gig at the Blues Fest and literally scrambled with all my gear, put it in the trunk, and drove to the Canadian Tire Center to see Paul McCartney. And I sat up in the nosebleeds, and he played Blackbird acoustic, and I cried my eyes out.
No shit. Yeah.
What's the new song like? What's it up?
It's called "Fa You."
What?
Yeah, and so when you listen to that line in context, what he's actually saying is "fuck you." He's saying to a woman, "I want to." Fuck you.
Oh, okay. It's not like fuck you, bitch. It's like I want to fuck
you,
bitch.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's going, I want to fuck you, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's risky. And I mean, God bless him. He's an older guy. Obviously, he's like the songwriter of songwriters of all time. He and John Lennon and a few others. And so, of course, he's going to keep writing songs. And, you know, I commend him on taking that risk.
Love Sir Paul.
Yeah, as a songwriter. I mean, you know, like, we can write about, you know, anything we want. I mean, you know, and we can say whatever the fuck we want. And you know, some of my songs have been seemingly nonsensical. But then, you know, when you step back a week or a month or a few months later, you go, okay, well, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so it doesn't really matter.
Do you figure like our genres of music would make a difference in that? Because I'm in a punk band. I'm in two punk bands. I've always played punk music. It's like the stuff I listen to. It's the stuff I want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the content between what you play and what I play would bring on different lyrics? Or is it all the same thing?
I don't know much about punk music. What I do know about punk music is I really, when I was hosting at Lunenburg, I really enjoyed when punk bands came in and played acoustic. Mm-hmm. Then I could hear their lyrics and I could hear the music really well. And I really enjoyed it. And they were incredible songwriters. I'm talking in particular about Mr. Saga, those guys. I can't remember what the name of the punk sort of act that came out of that was. But anyways, I'm also reminded, speaking of punk music and lyrics, of a band that had probably the Ottawa band that had the best name of all time. Well, they're maybe tied with Bob Loblaw. Mr. Saga was a pretty good name too. But these guys, they were called Jehovah's Witness.
Oh yes, yeah, for sure.
And they only wrote about sex.
Okay, good.
And they were extremely graphic. And to hear their records, unfortunately, the vocal was pretty buried, so you couldn't really hear what they were saying, and I was very interested.
Yeah. I have a really good friend in town. His name's Chris Landry. He's in a band called Chris Landry and the Seasick Mamas.
I know him well. Jim McDowell's a Seasick Mama.
Yeah, for sure. And he, Jim McDowell, is he the slide guitar player?
No, he'd be on piano.
Oh, piano. Okay. Sorry, Chris. But Chris is a huge Motorhead fan. Motorhead fan, and he's played in punk bands, but now he plays in more of a folky country style band, and his lyrics are absolutely beautiful, and just his tone and his content and like what he's singing about, And it's, you know, we're around the same age too, me and Chris, and it's just like, I'm playing like more punk stuff. It's just like, I couldn't do his lyrics, even though I'd love to sing them. I couldn't do it with like the structure of where I'm at. So is that why you see like punk rock guys eventually go to, let's use, you know, Slow Tom?
Oh yeah.
Tom Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
Let's use Tom as an example, who was in a band called Furnace Face, and then he was in, you know, oh, Jesus Christ, I can't even remember that band. Anyway, he's been in some, like, metal bands, and he's been in punk bands, but now he's in Slow Tom and The Handsome Gentleman, and he just sings songs about life and love and stuff like that. It's like, is punk rock, like, a dying breed to the point where you have to, like, break off if you actually want to speak your mind? Or, like, bare your soul?
Break off? You mean, like, go acoustic?
Well, maybe.
So, there is actually a template for this, and it's Neil Young.
Oh, nice.
Right?
Actually, that's really nice. Yeah, that's good.
Because Neil does both, and still does. And, you know, people would buy tickets for his tours, hoping he'd be acoustic. Mm-hmm. And then they'd show up, and it'd be the punk show, and they'd be all disappointed. But he's a rebel, and he's like, you know,
yeah,
you know, fuck you, take it or leave it. This is where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and God bless him. And, of course, he had that album, Rust Never Sleeps. It was half acoustic, half punk. And then he had that song, Why Do I Keep Fucking Up, which was probably around 91 or so, because he wanted one of those labels that said parental guidance or parental whatever.
Like an explicit lyric thing?
Yeah. He wanted one of those on his record. So, and Chris Landry is actually the same. So I actually played in Chris Landry's band for one gig with Jim, I'm pretty sure, and that would have been around 2009 or something like that, or maybe 2011, I don't know. And then he went back to the punk for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it looks like he's circled back to the acoustic stuff. And so he just kind of goes back and forth, and seems to really commit to I mean, yeah.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And I love his stuff. I love the Seasick Mama stuff, and I love like Slow Tom stuff, but I don't want to, I wish I could find a balance to sing a better lyric, I suppose, or a better content with the speed and aggression of punk, which is still something that really, really excites me. You know what I mean? Mm. Even at 44 years old, I still like shouting shit out. But if I shout out, I was sitting at home and thinking about, it just doesn't. Anyway.
You've seen the movie Anvil, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so those guys, when they're like 17, you know, they're like, when we're 17, we said we're going to rock our entire fucking lives, and we meant it.
Yeah. Here's a funny thing. I'm a runner, and I did the army run about, oh God, it must have been about 3 years ago. And I was running up Wellington Street past the Parliament Building, and Lips was on the side with a bunch of people.
Oh wow!
And he must have been cheering
Lips
on like
Anvil.
Yeah,
nice.
He must have been cheering on like a friend, because you can't miss him, right? He's got the long hair and the tight jeans, and I was running, and I'm like,
in the bondage wear.
Yeah, and I like felt, I looked back, I'm like, that's fucking Lips from Anvil. Oh, nice. I almost stopped running just to like, hey, man. But yeah, that was him, man. So I'm sorry, we completely went off of what you wanted to start the segment with.
No, that's all right. I got some shows coming up, some rock and roll shows. So I enjoy acoustic stuff, and I enjoy playing rock and roll. I play rock and roll with a band called Brown Paper Bag, with Jason Colton, who's also in Jumpin' Joel Flash and the Magic Machine, and also in my acoustic covers duo, Sven Edwerk. And Brown Paper Bag is at the Heart and Crown in the Byward Market this Friday, Saturday, so the 9th and 10th in the front room down in Byward Market, 10 to 2.
Did you want to promote Prom at all?
Prom is December 8th, and that is, what is the name of the space? You I can't recall. It's over in the, it's a different space. It's not in a bar.
Prom is at, that's where Prom is.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm glad you remembered that.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing show.
It is.
Yep.
Yeah. It's, and a little, you know, drama. I think there's going to be some burlesque there.
Right. There's going to be like two stages.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joel's got a crazy brain that just kind of like comes up with crazy things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he seems so normal. But he's a fucking lunatic.
Does he?
Okay. Maybe he doesn't.
I met Joel when he was the Fuzzy Bunny corporate Joel. So.
Right.
It's like, who is he now? No, he's the bandmaster.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to wrap this up almost.
I got one more tune to cue.
All right, what?
So we've been talking about punk, and I got there's a tune off my Greatest Misses compilation, which was a double album, which I released on cassette, which is another story. It's a format that I invented. It's an SD card in a cassette case.
Cassette. You said that on purpose? Yep. I was like, should I?
No, nope. Cassette. I got it. Anyways, so this song is called Waste the Night, Save the Day. It's a schizophrenic song. It's all dainty, you know, and then it goes into a punk section that's fucking hardcore, and then back again.
So you heard the man. This is Ego and Vice, episode 53.
Waste the night, save the day.
She'd catch that breeze. It's the vino, pay no mind. Now you see how I spend my tickets on the night.
Waste the Night, Save the Day by Ashley Newell. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
I wish you nothing but the best in all your amazing, like, tons and tons of stuff that you always have going on. It's been a pleasure having you in, and it's always a pleasure to see you and shoot the shit.
Thank you very much. Right back at you. Best luck on your tour, and thanks for the Coors Light.
No problem. The Coors Light is always flowing. If you want to get a hold of me, you can contact me at egoandvice@gmail.com. If you like what you hear and you want to listen to the podcast, you can go to egoandvice.com. I'm available on iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, Facebook, anywhere you can find podcasts. Just search Ego and Vice, and I should be there. So as for Ashley?
Bonsoir tout le monde.
Why?
We'll see you November 16th at Bar Robo, Newell and the Gang, and the Artichoke Hearts.
All right. That's episode 53. Thank you so much. You guys take care. We'll see you next week.
Bork, bork.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker.